All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. We're going to talk about, like, just, you know, old people shit. Everything's changed.
This is Beers with Talos. Threats, beers, and all silver bullets.
So I actually have a good anecdote to open this up with.
All right, all right.
Old people shit.
Oh, well, let Lorene open it then.
Well, then let me get it started.
No, no, let Lorene do it.
Welcome or welcome back to Beers with Talos, episode
145.
Oh, fuck.
We're keeping it. It's perfect.
All right. We're going to talk about how we're old today.
Yeah, it's the old people episode.
I don't even know if I can
here. Like, we just took
jump
over.
In. Yeah, I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can do this if I don't start it off. Like, I'm just gonna be lost the whole show.
Do you
show.
Want to do it again? Like, you could do it.
You can do it, and then Go we'll on. Just have Hazel can cut it out.
Yeah, but then you'll be on like the right did. Track.
Now it's all awkward, guys. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know.
Why'd you make it weird?
Yeah. But this is actually 145. I believe. I don't know. Today's March 15th. Forgot that part, Lorene. 2024.
It is.
Does that all that does? Like, why do we do that? Why do we date stamp this? Because
it's not going to go out.
All it does is
it gives context to the conversation sometimes. Like, depends on what we're talking about. Like, especially when we're talking
it's
about things.
2024 would be plenty for this one.
When we're talking about shit that, like, you know, is ongoing or like super duper current. Because we could be dead ass wrong like 5 days later, so it's important to know what day we were talking about it on.
I guess that's true.
So today we are going to talk about everything that's changed since we are all old people.
Yeah. What is the, like, are we old physically or are we old spiritually at this point?
Both.
Yeah, definitely feel
both. I'm looking at my beard. I'm definitely old.
Oh my god, dude, I saw pictures of I was in that the Talos Memory Box channel. Like, you know, we have that big thing for our anniversary where we're collecting all those images, and I was in that channel and I saw some pictures of both of us, Matt, but the one that, like, caught my attention was, like, there's a picture of me. It was not 4 or 5 years ago, I don't think. And there was no gray at all in my beard. And it's like, it's almost all gray now. Like, it's crazy, crazy how fast that happens. But let's go around and start this one off the way we usually start off. Lorene, you already had your kickoff topic in mind for Beers with Talos Old People Edition.
Yeah, so this popped up yesterday, and then Matt said something else that made me think about it. But Windows 11, for the longest time, had no volume mixer on the taskbar. Like, you had to go f***ing around in the settings in order to go find that thing, right? Whereas in Windows 10, you just click it, and there it is. You just, like, select your output. And then I woke up yesterday and my Windows 11 work laptop suddenly had a mixer in there. And I was like, oh, remember when you used to, like, have some warning when the interface for your own personal computer was going to change randomly on you? And they were just going to, like, remove or add some large thing?
Yeah, because you had to go get the floppies to do the update.
Yeah. One of my people posted a meme, like, with me saying that, and an old lady with a walker, and the other person was like, let's take you home now, grandma. And I was like, I don't feel like that's unreasonable. Like, I've never gotten up to use my miter saw and gone downstairs and had it be completely different than the last time I used my miter saw. Why is this acceptable?
The safety feature is now just direction change. Oh, man. No, I get it.
Don't mess with my tools. I'm a craftsperson.
Well, speaking of mixers, though, I was really hoping this was going another direction, because anytime you talk about mixers in Windows, it just makes me miss Winamp, like, with a burning passion. I wish that somebody would have, like, some kind of port where you could have, like, the old Winamp. Like, remember you could get all the skins for Winamp, and you'd have, like, the, like, whatever, like, cool little Stormtrooper color or...
Can't you just run Winamp?
Can you run Winamp on, like, a modern Mac OS?
Yeah, there's still Winamp.
Why would you be on a Mac?
Well, That's why I miss. I miss Winamp.
Your problem here is not Winamp. This is a Mitch problem.
I didn't know Winamp was still being supported.
Yep. Yeah, 18 languages. Still runs on MS-DOS. Oh, they have Macium too.
They
so
do?
We're all wrong.
Nice.
Yep.
All right, this whole episode just made my day. I'm a happy camper now.
There. All right, so we're done, I guess.
Matt, yeah. I guess we can all actually just go home. I don't know. What's on your mind? What's your old man rant today?
Yeah, we talked about Volt Typhoon a few weeks ago. There's so much going on right now in the cyber landscape that is concerning. I haven't had a lot of time for thinking about other stuff. So just like an update to people, like, yeah, Volt Typhoon still front and center on our concern level. But I would say, having saw something out of the corner of my eye, if you are...
Squirrel.
What's up?
This is squirrel.
Yeah, roughly. As I look around desperately for something to give me an idea on what to talk about, I would say that I had thought about this before. There are two computer games right now that are hot inside of Talos that are completely different from each other. One is called Helldivers 2, which is a friendly fire simulator with big explosions. If you approach it in good faith, it is one of the most enjoyable shooter experiences going right now. It is like get yourself three friends, get on the Helldivers 2 server and just have yourself a fine old time. It is a great way to burn a few hours laughing at the nonsense that happens. On the other end of the spectrum is a very slow paced a game called Balatro, which is Italian for Joker, and it's a roguelike that is based on poker. And it is, both of these are below market price for computer games. This one's something like $13, $14, Helldivers 2, something like 20 something. They are very enjoyable. Balatro is a great, like, I've got 20 minutes to kind of to noodle around with something, and I want something that makes my brain work, but not something that makes me concerned about the state of the world. So it is a fantastic exercise of the brain. Try to figure out what the odds are, keeping track of what your deck is. You start with 52 cards. You can remove cards, add cards. Cards become better. There are 150 different jokers that modify the rules of play, plus a whole bunch of other things. It is endlessly fascinating, and it can scale to however difficult you want it to be at any given time. So definitely check out one of those two. I have recommended both over the past couple of weeks to different people depending on what they were looking for.
Man, I almost beat the wall the other day
in Balatro.
I had like you only need four cards for a straight or a flush, and then the other one where like you can skip cards in a straight. And then I had like a bunch of spades pumped up, and anytime you play a spade, it's multiplier times something. And so if I had really played that right and done all straight flushes, I could have beaten the wall. Like, I had the setup to do it, but I haven't beaten it yet.
You can get it on the Balatro's available both through Steam and also on Switch.
Which is a problem.
I have it on both.
Yeah,
just to let you know what kind of problem it is.
Me too.
But I took my Switch over to my 70-year-old father's house, and like he played it for a while. Like, it is easy to pick up, but like really as complicated as you let it get. So yeah, a big fan of both of those. To let you know how good Helldivers 2 is, there is a internal WebEx chat room for video games, and there was so much Helldivers 2 chat that there is now a Helldivers 2 chat room completely separate from all other video games for people to talk about what's going on with it. So both are great. Take a look at one of the two of them for sure.
Do not ask the internet about Helldivers 2,
no.
though.
No. man.
Just have three of your own friends, get your own friends, and bring them in and ignore every other human. Yeah. And then you'll have a great time.
Because it has been fantastic through all the different patches. And the internet has lost its mind at various points of time. And also, you don't have to play on the hardest difficulty. Like, go out, like, get your friends and go out on a four, light bugs on fire, and have the time of your life.
Yeah, don't listen to the internet and don't take it particularly seriously.
I think not listening to the internet is actually probably just solid life advice, as well as don't take it too seriously.
Yeah. We say from our podcast.
I don't recommend anybody listen to us ever. Like, that's, no. Yeah, to be clear.
But
that's fair.
The problem with the internet is,
here it comes,
when it's good, it's so perfect.
Yeah, but like, that hasn't happened consistently for 15 years.
It's not consistent.
It's
not,
it's been, for the last 10 years, it's like heroin.
Yeah.
We're on the last stages of this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I am addicted to that that random comment on an obscure topic that, like, uses wordplay and references some other thing. And it's just like, you could have a million comics sit in a room trying to come up a joke and they never would come close to it. But that person, wherever they're sitting, you'll never meet them. They'll never know how hard you laughed. They said what is objectively the perfect line for whatever context had been set up. It's like humanity, right? There are shitty humans, but there are also like great inspiring humans. There are shitty events on the internet, and I aggressively prune my feeds for that. Like I am not interested in current events largely. Like, and like the things that I'm laughing at have nothing to do with the real world. But sometimes you are interested in something and you run into a toxic kind of pool, and you just have to like be mature enough to be like, okay, that's people who aren't having a good time in life in general, not able to have a good time anywhere. I'm not letting that bug me.
That's fair.
I do enjoy the Helldivers 2 Reddit. I love the people that buy into the Starship Troopers pro fascist satire lore and understand, like, you can tell that they understand that they're engaging in a satirical piece of lore, and it's so funny to me sometimes, and I need that, I need those moments, because I am ruthlessly engaged in the internet in a field where things are awful, and I need to know that this thing that I'm defending has good things on it, and so I can't just abandon it and like log off from work and not engage with the internet. I need to feel the good stuff.
What a good segue.
It really is. Like, I mean, how awful are things? Like, I mean, are they more awful? Are they awfuler now than they have been? And honestly, before we do that, though, like, why shouldn't we just let it burn?
I'm on the let it burn side.
Maybe that is the answer. I don't know.
Because I'm keenly aware of what runs on it, and letting it burn will get out of control very quickly. And I'm desperately trying not to let anybody burn it down.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The longer you keep it up, the more important stuff they're going to put on it. So when the burn does come, it's going to be worse.
That moment has passed.
Like, the cars... all of the cars are not controlled by the internet yet.
Yeah. Yet.
But you were just saying that you have trouble putting it down when you walk away. And we had a conversation earlier about how the industry has changed relative to that.
Elements of it. Like I think there's a different distribution of people in security than there was in 2003 or 2004 or whenever we started on this path, I think what I said, like, just let listeners know, we had a record 45-minute pre-show discussion as we were trying to figure out what we really wanted to hone in on, and then we had a really good discussion about this topic and wanted to kind of bring it over here. I think what I said was, in the perception I have, and part of this does need to be emphasized that I'm talking from a vendor side, a vendor experience, is that the industry at one point was populated largely by one of two kinds of people. One, people who were just passionate about security, like that was their hobby, because there was no classes for security. There was no clear certifications even.
There were no jobs.
Yeah, people were doing security, but like they were system admins, right? Like there was no distinction between a system admin and security people. And that kind of what has happened in the course of our career is the definition of what the security career has become more concrete, even though much more widely varied than it was when we were starting, which always makes me on this podcast when we're talking about career stuff sort of uneasy, because the career path that I had is probably possible now, but is not common or advisable.
Yeah, I have no advice to give younger people, because the way that I did it is so not the way you would do it now that I would be giving bad advice, basically.
Well, I think it would be fascinating. Can you tell listeners about how you learned how to do computer exploitation? Like, can you share like how you became aware of and the examples that you worked on, and kind of like, because it's so, there was no OSCP, none of that existed now.
Yeah, I guess. So I had gotten interested in working on weird Unix variants when I was in high school. Like my personal computer when I was like 16 years old was a Spark Station 2, right? And I would run like NetBSD or OpenBSD on it. And so I had some sysadmins at a job that I worked at when I was 16 writing Perl for websites that were into this stuff, and I started learning from them. And then I went to school and, you know, focused on low-level programming. And then when I got out of school, I had a mentor that was a government contractor that basically taught me with the HERA examples, like from Core Security. And I got to meet him once, and that was super cool. But then from there, I had gotten a job at SourceFire from Matt Wachinski because I had found a remote bug in the SourceFire firewall, like the actual like login screen. So it was a remote root bug. And then once I started working for Matt, my job was on Microsoft Tuesday. We didn't get anything from any companies, but we still had to come up with this coverage, right? Because we had the open source solution, so nobody wanted to deal with us. So we would reverse engineer, like you'd get the patches, you'd patch a system, you'd diff them, the binaries, you'd find the bug, you'd write the exploit, you'd write up the triggering conditions, and then you hand it off generally to Matt or Patrick, and we'd get the content out, we put it all together and send it out. But like it was a once a month sprint to write 15 exploits, you know? Yeah. So
I remember, and we've talked about this a little bit, or I've talked about like my experience on, but like I'm trying to express to like, Loreen came to us and was like, oh, I'll teach you guys how to do like basic exploitation development. And then she's like, I have these files that my mentor gave me, and these are what we're going to use to learn. And it was, I mean, it's just like that. It was like handed down from the mountain on high, and we had to go up the trail and like sit at the feet of the master, sort of like literally that's what it felt like. And that's so not scalable. This is not old people being like, in our day, it was like there's no way that would survive in today's environment. Like we don't have time for that. We need to have people who know how to educate adults, consume this information and then output courses to rapidly accelerate adults into learning what we need to do. And so that gives us scale. But like there's, I think there's probably some loss of depth along the way.
And that's a lot of the depth's not necessary for 90% of the jobs in the career, which is another reason I can't be helpful to other people, right? Like they're saying, I want to be in a SOC. I'm like, well, what do I have to tell you? I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, but that whole, that's the just the concept of a SOC is like, is.
That wasn't a thing.
Yeah, no, you had a knock for, right? And,
yeah.
and then eventually they're like, oh, these, yeah. There's too many of these little security monkeys are bothering my network people, get them their own room. And then thus the SOC was born. but yeah, it's something Lorene said, like, don't, like, if you're new to security, the first thing I would warn you of is do not let old people gatekeepers interfere with your dream or your concept of where you want to go in security. The problem with security is it is a game of competing depth. And so part of what we've talked about in the past is you always have to be learning in security, and you always have to be developing depth in places that you're not used to working. And that's just something that you need to be comfortable with as a person to get into this field, I think. But what that also means is you will run into spectacular, game-changing industry contributors that you, as someone who has been in the security community 3 to 5 years, will know things about security they don't know. Because their requirements they've had for depth do not match the requirements you've had for depth. There will be like, and you can't know everything, and you don't have to know everything. And so, like, just do not ever compare yourself to people in that way. Like, oh, in order for me to do this, I have to know what that person knows. No, in order for you to do this, you have to have someone who will give you money to solve the problems they have. And those problems likely have very little relation to the very specific problems that some person you admire has had to deal with. And so that's like the first old thing I would say, given that we're having the old person episode, is do not let old people define for you what your career path is, because this shit is changing so fast and moving so quickly that, like, the dinosaurs did amazing things, but they are currently becoming narrower and narrower in scope because the breadth of what security is has gotten so wide. Mm-hmm. That like I have had an incredible career in security. My cloud security side is weak. Like I am constantly looking shit up, trying to figure out what's going on in the cloud security space, because I grew up in a world with no cloud. and a lot of my career was cloud agnostic at best, going down the road. And so, yeah, like that's the first thing I'd say to people.
Yeah.
It's been interesting to see what the definition of cybersecurity, like how that has changed over time, right? Like, and this comes from what you were just saying, Matt. So, I mean, we first started hearing about like social engineering, phishing, even phishing was like, that wasn't, there's a lot of people who initially, when phishing first became like a thing or a thing that was being talked about as phishing, like, well, that's not a cybersecurity problem. Like that's a people problem. Like that's a social engineering problem, or, you know, it's not bits and bytes. I can't defend it with a rule. So it's not cybersecurity. And to watch that kind of evolve over time into now, what was the one we were talking about, the other, smishing?
Smishing.
Someone asked us about smishing, and I'm like, what is that?
Yeah. There's vishing and smishing and all the ishings and watching privacy, kind of where privacy has started to intersect with cybersecurity and how that's kind of blossomed out to, you know, widen the scope of what cybersecurity actually is. That's been interesting to me over time to just kind of watch that unfold beyond bits and bytes into cybersecurity, like where it impacts people, like as a human issue, not necessarily, yep, just as a bits and bytes issue.
I had a conversation the other day with an organization responsible for the cybersecurity of their country. So it was a country level cybersecurity. And they were asking me, how do we do this? How we can do that? How we do that? And for the first time in my career, they were asking the kind of question where I'm like, I had to say, like, there's not a technology answer for what you're talking about. The solution for what you're saying lies in national cybersecurity policy, which, you know, even like 5 years ago, was not a thing I would have been capable of saying. But like, there is space in this game for, I mean, literally everybody. Like, if you have an interest in international relations, I can find a role for you in cybersecurity. And so, like I'm not a policy person. Like, I don't have the patience to noodle through the positives and negatives and everything else. And so I will comment on stuff that we're doing in the policy space, but that's definitely like a thing that Eric Winger and the government affairs folks specialize in. And they are no less a part of the cybersecurity community than I am. Like, that is how broad this has gotten.
Here's the thing. If you were looking at it the way we used to look at it, where phishing was not a cybersecurity problem, it was a con man problem, right? And as we have moved all human interaction to the internet, now all human con men live on the internet, right? And so now your problem is the Trojan horse in the Iliad is a cybersecurity problem, right? Like, if you can trick someone into doing something, that's a cybersecurity problem. So now all of crime, if you can figure out how to be a problem as a human being to other human beings, congratulations, you're a cybersecurity expert.
I mean, yeah, a lot of our...
or at least a cyber criminal.
Yeah.
Become a new kind of problem. That's my advice to young people. Invent an issue that I haven't thought of to f*** other humans.
Become a new kind of solution. Like, that would also be useful.
Takes
no,
kinds.
Because you can't become a solution until there's a problem. This exactly. is
we are Lurine. Not out
thing.
Of problems, Lurine. We are up to our goddamn ears in problems.
Okay, well, you're not a researcher anymore. So at Black Hat last year, someone from Code 42 came up and was like, "What should I research next? Should I think about this thing that other people are doing to other people, or this thing that other people are doing to other people?" And I was like, you will never be as good at that thing as the people who are doing it to other people. So what good is you studying it? Go find out how to be a new kind of a problem. If you want to be a researcher, make a new problem. Because there are not new problems. There's only problems that some people know about and some people don't.
Oh, man. Right? I so disagree with you.
Do you think there's new problems?
No, I think you can absolutely be a researcher. You can absolutely be a researcher that's focusing on solutions, and when you're building a solution,
nobody does that until they understand how to be the problem. Because the person who knows how to be the problem,
right,
that's the one that knows the contours of how they're becoming a problem. And if what you're doing is looking at what they've done, you've seen the subset of how they've tried to solve the problem of being a problem, okay, not the entirety of the space.
So
they will always be
back to you being an old person. Think you might be letting how you came into this influence how you're thinking about it. Like,
I'm letting conversations I have with other humans,
right,
to this day,
I have
tell me that.
A lot of people who I consider security researchers under my wing, very few of them have the capacity or desire to approach things from a how do I be a problem point of view. And I would call them highly to superiorly effective.
So you would call them security researchers or intel people? Because I think you have the best intel people, right? But at the same time, like, if I'm interfacing with a three-letter organization that I have worked somewhere with previously, that there are like separations between that, right? Like, there is your operators and your like researchers and in the weapons space, and then there's like your researchers that are understanding global affairs. And that's like, I mean, I guess if we're talking about the whole broadness. Yeah, you're right. Never mind. I'm wrong. You're right. Yeah. I just answered my own question. Sorry about that. This person who was talking to me in particular about doing research on technical problems in, you know, the context of I want to talk at Black Hat about a new technical problem. And the question is, what technical problem that already exists do I look at? Right? But I have seen over and over again, even nowadays, the problem where someone's like, oh man, I know how to solve that security problem. I built this tool. And I look at it and I'm like, that's cool. You've solved that piece that most people do. And now you've built them a 2-foot wall, right? Because there's 800 other ways to do this con. You don't understand the con.
Yeah.
You understand the implementation of the con.
Yes. Yeah, that I agree with. And I think this goes back to another piece of conversation we had earlier where I was kind of talking about sometimes when I'm brought into an organization that's having a security incident and they're not security experts, like they're engineers or they're manufacturers or something, and they explain it to me, they lay out what's happening, and I say, I think this, they're baffled with how I understand, like, why I think that, because they had built, based on their past experience, which lacks a lot of security background, their understanding of the space, and they've had their, you know, shallow understanding of security kind of go on. And I think that sort of plays into what you're saying. It's like, I would not say you can be successful in security without understanding the attacker mindset. And there's a few ways to develop that. Because I think that includes the intelligence analyst that we were talking about. Like,
yeah,
they
for
understand
sure.
the attacker mindset
for sure.
because they've seen it and they have to be like, why would someone do this? Why are they here? Why are they taking this action? Why did they do this different thing? Why are they using this new tool? Why are they doing this? And so they're putting together a model, but they're doing it from metadata as opposed to the way that you came into it, where you did it by being the bad guy and then having to defeat different security controls. I absolutely agree with you in that regard, because the number of times that I've had new technologies kind of explained to me, like, this is our new detection methodology, and like, it's going to change the game. And I'm like, you have literally solved one problem, and you've solved it only within the context of the current environment and without any thought as to how the actor might respond to your
yes,
change in the environment.
That's the thing, how the actor might respond, right? And they'll say, well, why don't we do it? It will make things better. And I'm like, what you're actually going to do is cause a slight mutation in the way that people do that. And it's going to take about a week, and then no one's going to buy this thing that you're going to have to spend years supporting, right? Because you didn't solve the con, you solved the way they were doing it yesterday.
Yeah, you can never forget in security that this is a game between a set of human beings, right?
It's and evolution.
And you can lose track of that very quickly because you have a distorted view of the actor actions based on what observability you have in your environment and how good you are at interpreting what that limited telemetry is telling you. And so you are always executing in an environment where you don't have even a majority of the information that you would ideally have. And so it's part of why even large organizations call in incident response firms when they have events, is because that incident response firm has done hundreds or thousands of events, and they're able to take those pieces that you have and are able to go back either mechanically through tooling or through the native intuition of their analysts and be like, oh, okay, we see these six elements. You're missing some because your observability is bad, but man, this sure does look like this. Here are the things you can expect to happen. Can you check this to see if this is true here? Oh, it is? Yeah, we're probably sure this is what happened. This probably was your initial access, even though you don't have sufficient logs to show that. But this actor, if this is who it is, has done these things, and it sure looked like that. And that's like that's the value of IR, is filling in blanks that you don't have a hope of understanding.
Yeah, because you don't have time. You have to run your business, right?
Right. I mean, that's all. Like, you're not paying the IR team for the time they spend in your environment. You're paying them for the expertise they develop, so they only spend that much time in your environment. You know what I mean? Like,
and so here's the problem, is that many organizations get an IR team because their insurance company told them they had to, not understanding why they're getting an IR team. So then the IR team shows up and starts saying shit that doesn't make sense to them. And then there's almost always some period of friction where you then have to like spend time explaining to the firm how you came to this conclusion. And like, it would be lovely if we as an IR firm, like, were able to go in and we said, you should do the following. And people were like, okay, we'll do that. Never happens. They're like, well, we think this. And you're like, that makes no sense. How did you, because then you have to spend time like, how did you get here? What decision making? Okay, let's unwrap that. You're missing this context. Let me explain to you the nature of this. And it's just, for, in terms of a newcomer to the environment, what I would say is, understand that this game is unfair. You are likely, as a newcomer, on defense. And that is certainly a place that is challenging. And so you can only execute on what your experience provides you the ability to execute on. And so part of your job as a new person is to keep your eyes open and to consume as much information as possible. And I would guide you to consume information that is of interest to you, because that's the easiest information to consume. And then as needed for your job. But like, you're in a sprint to catch up with people who have 10, 15 years experience on this. Some of that is time that you simply have to spend in an environment dealing with really hard issues. And some of that is time that you can spend reading really interesting papers or trying stuff out in different lab environments. But like, when you come in, you cannot expect, there is no trade path for cybersecurity because it's so broad. You will come in and you will be limited by your environment, and you have to learn how to operate in that environment. And what I would say is, it's probably in your best interest to become as much of an expert in that environment as possible and to move on and get someplace else that has a different lens, because that's the advantage IR has over you, is they have been in 1,000 environments with different lenses, and you need to have that as well. If you want to kind of rise in the ranks, that experience has to come from multiple different environments.
That makes sense. That makes absolute sense. I mean, at the end of the day, most, I want to say all, but there's exceptions, of course, but like, most disciplines inside cybersecurity are at their core problem solving. Whether you're a developer, an attacker, a defender, like, everybody's trying to solve a problem. But if you're limiting yourself to the same set of problems or the same small subset of problems that you're looking at daily, your ability to answer bigger or more complex or even just different problems is somewhat diminished. So getting the broadest view or broadest look at the problem set for whatever it is that you're doing in security is always going to be advantageous. Always going in terms of developing.
I'm thinking about it. I'm so hesitant to give like concrete guidance, but the more I think about it, like, you can go, like, there's a couple of routes, right? You should get your SOC time, like, and do not miss the basics. Like, get your network skills under control, know how the internet works, get some time on different systems, knows how Windows works, know how Unix works, do all that stuff, have a scripting language under your belt. My advice is Python. You may be fascinated by other ones,
so,
but
pretty.
Python is sort
just
of the lingua.
Learn Python, please.
Yeah. And then get yourself either on a red team or on an IR team. Like, find a path to one of those two, because if you really want to understand the foundations of security, understand the things that will allow you to be an effective high-end contributor on a blue team or a red team, those are your two paths. And it really doesn't matter, right? If you want to be a high-end red teamer and you can only get on an IR team right now, that's fine, because that's going to teach you all the ways that you're caught. And it'll teach you all the ways that defenders can work against you, so that when you get your chance on a red team, you know what you need to bypass.
The logs.
And you know what risks you're taking when you have to make a decision. Like, I have this objective. If I do this, there's some risk. I may leave these artifacts. I don't have access to be able to, like, and you can express those to your leadership and be like, here's, you know, what do you think we want to go here? Or if you want to be on the blue team and be on IR, or you want to be in a CISO's office, your time as a red teamer will be invaluable, because you will have done the things that you're worried about people doing, and you will have understood, like, how to manipulate people. You will understand how to manipulate systems. You'll understand that when someone comes to you and says, this is secure, that may be the stupidest thing that person has ever said. So, like, those two paths, neither of which I took, but both of which I'm familiar with, I think may be the best paths available to you right now to accelerate your path through a security career.
Yeah, I guess both of those paths give you an opportunity to develop your thief eyes. And what I mean by thief eyes is when most people are walking around looking at the world, there's a set of rules that they expect to be enforced, and they think those rules are real. And anything they are told about how those rules work, that's what they assume is going on around them. And they're not actually parsing all of the data. They're just letting part of their brain slide because they're following, they expect these rules to be followed. And what you have to do is open your eyes and look at what's actually there in front of you and say, well, no one's looking. I can reach that thing, right? Like, that's the type of awareness that you have to have. Not like, oh, there's obviously no way I could get into the such and such. No, really, really, it probably is. The idea in your head that everyone is following all of the rules and that you must follow all of the rules is an idea in your head and is not real. And it actually takes a lot of mental energy to open your eyes and look at what is actually real, as opposed to assuming that what you think is real is real. And that is, like,
that's why the assumptions feel
that's
safe.
The most important thing you can learn as a security person is, like, you know, you ever see Pirates of the Caribbean where he's on the boat?
Yeah, I remember the part on the
and
boat.
He's explaining the sorry about that.
The pirate movie where he's on a boat.
He's on the boat with the kid for the first time, the sword kid, right? They're on the little boat. And he says, what I am concerned with is what a man can do and what a man can't do. Now, I can stab you right now and throw you over the side of the boat, but I can't bring this boat myself into that harbor, right? What is important is what a man can do and what a man can't do, not what they're supposed to do or what they think they're supposed to do.
Supposed to.
That's what's important. And it takes a lot of energy to turn your brain on and actually pay attention to everything that's going on and analyze all of it, as opposed to making those assumptions. So most people aren't doing it. That's like how misdirection works, right?
Exactly how
it works. If you are a stage magician, you know exactly how to trick people's attention, right? That's part of it. Part of it is the expectation that people have coming in. If they have no expectation, if you give someone mushrooms and you send them to a stage magic show, they're going to see more of the tricks than the people who haven't had any mushrooms.
Probably. Yeah.
Right? They're going to be looking at the wrong hand.
Yeah.
Not the one the guy's looking at, because they're not picking up those cues that are supposed to push you that way. Right. So that sort of thing, develop your thieves' eyes. Like, what is actually stopping you from doing something for real? Did you try it? Do you push on it yet?
Yeah. I think we've covered this before in the, where we actually talked about the when you taught us exploit development, and what I said and continue to believe is that in my mind, my understanding of security is divided between the time before I got root and the time after I got root.
It's initiation. It makes you different.
Yeah, because you understand that the computer there's no magic. And because there's no magic, that means that there are absolutely rules. And because there are rules, if you know the rules better than somebody else, you are in a superior position. And you also know that when someone, like, you become very good at people, at detecting people hand-waving technology shit at you. And you know that, you know, me spending 8 hours really digging into something will beat a salesperson with 5 years experience selling something when it comes to understanding what that product can truly do. Right. And so like that time, like that, it's you have to develop an inherent suspicion of modern technology. And once, and I just warn you, if you're new, once you lose that trust, the world becomes a much more difficult place to live in. Like, because you will actively avoid things that a lot of people will adopt because you just inherently know that it's trouble. And you may not be trouble for you, but you know at scale, it is definitely trouble. And so if you haven't developed that, that's one of the things you need to work on. And honestly, I think learning's right. The fastest way to do that is to learn how to execute arbitrary code in places where they didn't expect you to do it. And it doesn't have to be, assembly level, shellcode stuff. I think you can get that same sort of revelation through working through like web application penetration testing, like just any place where someone tells you, I built this and it does this. And then you look at it and you're like, did you know it also does this? And like that moment.
Yeah, you can learn this from the self-checkout line at your own grocery store.
That's actually the best place to learn this lesson.
And I suggest you do.
All right, guys.
The most lucrative painful. In the short term.
Let's go around and get a quick closing thought and parting shot and put this one to bed. I think it's actually been a pretty good discussion today. Loreen, we started with you, so let's go to you first for a closing thought and parting shot.
Oh, man. Pray for all of my workers on my internal projects this week.
Yeah. We won't go into details, but yeah, you got a challenge in front of you. Yeah.
Nothing's really new for me. I'm still chugging along, playing my music, playing obnoxious video games with my friends.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
Matt, closing thought, parting shot.
Yeah, go download a Mac amp. Have yourself a good time. Don't forget the visualizers.
I'm going to go download Mac Amp. Does it still whip the llama's ass, though? That's
what I
need
to know. If it
doesn't,
you send it right back and get the old version.
I don't even know the words you just
absolutely. I will be furious. I'll be furious if it does not whip the llama's ass. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining, for listening, and for hanging out with us today. I thought that was a pretty good talk. Like, I mean, just kind of look back. Nothing in particular to talk about today. No big threat. No big, like, specific bad guy thing. Just kind of looking back at our experience.
There's plenty out there. We just didn't talk about it today.
Just not today.
Do they copyright that really whips the llama's ass line, or can we steal that?
I don't know. I'm sure.
Beers with Talos really whips the snort pig's ass.
I mean...
All right, never mind.
We can if we want. Like,
all right. We'll workshop it.
Oh, all right. Well, until next time, stay safe, stay secure, and we will see you on episode 146 or so, we believe, at this point in time. Next time on Beers with Talos. Cheers.
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine.